Well, I'm going to get one little just factoid out of the way so that you never have to wonder about it again, but we've heard it for 2 weeks. Didymus means twin. That's all it means. So, now you know. You can win at Wordscapes with that one. The core of Christianity is the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus of Nazareth. And the church year has two basic parts. The Christmas cycle, when we hear the prophecies about the coming Messiah, the birth of the Messiah, the Christ, and the revelation that Jesus Christ is the Messiah and is the Savior not just of the people of Israel, but of all tongues and all nations, all times, all places. This shocking inclusiveness of this Messiah was in stark contrast to humanity's protective polarization that justified killing anyone not in our camp. It's humanity's addiction to violence that sets us up for the second cycle, the Easter cycle, when we hear the prophecies about the death of God's Messiah and we celebrate the resurrection of Christ. This connection between Christmas and Easter, by the way, is why the Easter Gloria we sang at the beginning of the service, early part of Easter, was sung to a Christmas carol. Angels We Have Heard on High. So just in case you're wondering why that connection was made. Now, are Jesus' incarnation and resurrection only about Jesus? What difference do they make to those of us still on this side of the grave? Or maybe this side of the grave? And that's precisely the conundrum facing the friends of Jesus at that first Easter. It was swell that the Father loved Jesus enough to raise him from the dead, but what has that got to do with them now? Were they supposed to just die, wait, die, then go be with the Lord again? How long would that take? In our gospel story today, we're with seven of the male disciples, and so far they've seen the risen Jesus twice, and they haven't recognized him twice, and they're 3 for 3 today. Now, the last time Jesus saw him, he said he was sending them out, full of the Spirit, even breathed on them. But like so many of us, they had no idea what to do with that. They're joyful, but they're confused. What can this mean? So those seven men left Jerusalem and walked about 100 miles north from Jerusalem to the Sea of Tiberias, Sea of Galilee, same place, which is where they were from. That's where their hometown is. And you know what they did when they got there? They went back to their old jobs. They went back to what they knew. They went back to their pre-Easter lives, to their everyday, normal lives. It's like Easter hadn't really happened at all. Jesus comes to those joyful but confused fishermen in their everyday, normal lives, and Jesus does again what Jesus did before he was killed. He feeds people by the side of a lake. Not 5,000 this time, only 7, with bread and fish. Some dinner parties are bigger than others. Jesus brings his resurrection life through the terror of death and continues God's miracle of feeding and caring for those he loves. And then Jesus asks Peter, "Do you love me?" Peter says, "Of course I do." Jesus asks again. Peter says, "Yes," again. And when the third time came, Peter catches on that Jesus is confronting each one of Peter's denials, his 3 denials, the 3 times he denied even knowing Jesus just a couple weeks before, denied even knowing him, let alone being his follower. And this reminder of his own cowardice stabs Peter in the heart. Jesus knows everything about him, the good and the terrible. And yet, Jesus is giving him another chance. He's giving him another chance. Peter walks through the pain and says yes to love the 3rd time. But loving isn't just something you feel. Loving is something you do. And Jesus unleashes the power of the resurrection to transform Peter's life. Each time Peter tells Jesus he loves him, Jesus tells him, "Put that love into action. Do what I did. Keep following me as a living Lord." The power of the resurrection is to free us for a life of love in the midst of a world that wields death. The purpose a life of purpose and meaning and hope and love and strength and trust in the midst of pain and betrayal and violence and chaos and emptiness. I surely don't need to tell you that we still live in the midst of a world that wields death. As I said, killing those who aren't in our camp is what we human beings have been doing for some 10,000 years. We're dedicated to feeding our lambs, caring for our sheep, and the devil can take the rest. But which lambs are Jesus' lambs? Which sheep belong to him? Jesus' shocking inclusiveness 2,000 years ago is still in sharp contrast to our protective polarization. Look again at that amazing vision of heaven in the Revelation to John. I want you to just imagine this in your head as I read this. Then I looked, and I heard the sound of many angels surrounding the throne, the living creatures and the elders. They numbered in the millions, thousands upon thousands. And I heard every creature in heaven and on earth and under the earth and in the sea. I heard everything, everywhere say, blessing, honor, glory, and power belong to the one seated on the throne and to the Lamb forever and always. Every creature in heaven and on earth and under the earth and in the sea. Now who's left out of this heavenly gathering? Indeed, what is left out? Jesus won't let the devil take any of his sheep, any of his lambs. And so he doesn't call his followers to hole up in a fortress to protect themselves. He tells Peter and us to follow him right out into the midst of a world that wields death with love, not optimism. Optimism is when you're sure everything's going to go all right, but with love. And Jesus knew, Peter knew, I know, you know, that everything's not all right all the time. Indeed, Peter followed Jesus right into martyrdom, as the usual forces of polarization did its very best to stop Peter from caring for Jesus' lambs. We, too, are sent people, people who go to take care of all sheep and all lambs, wherever they are in this broken and beautiful world, whether we agree with them or not. What does this look like? Well, last October, 11 people were gunned down in a synagogue in Pennsylvania. We quickly, here in Dunedin, organized an interfaith candlelight vigil in Pioneer Park with our friends at the synagogue down in Clearwater. In March, 100 people were killed or injured in two mosques in New Zealand. And I went to the mosque here in Dunedin to support them. And the mosque hosted that fabulous dinner. 400 people came to that dinner. And there was still food left over. You and Jesus have something in common. This Easter, hundreds of Christians and foreigners were assaulted in Sri Lanka. And I was contacted immediately by my friends at the mosque who asked if they could come here today to show their love and respect. And thank you for being here. Just over a week ago, another shooting in another synagogue, this one in San Diego. And yesterday, I went with my friends from the mosque, from the Baha'i community, another church, to be with our Jewish friends at Congregation Beth Shalom as a sign of deep respect and complete solidarity. Now, these are fine, fine things. But wait a minute. If love isn't just something you feel, but something you do, shouldn't we be doing something before the killings? In terms of the gospel, if what we say is our desire to follow Jesus, we can't feed dead sheep. We can't take care of murdered lambs. That was exactly the message that my sister, Hend El-Hadi, gave to us yesterday. The rabbis at the synagogue invited this precious Muslim woman to speak. The rabbis, the Jewish rabbis, invited a Muslim woman to speak. I want you to let that sink in for just a second. Her message was that mourning together is beautiful and comforting, but stopping the violence before it starts is the only way to honor and respect the life God gives to all creatures. She said we need to act first and save, not just react and weep. How do we start to care for the living sheep and lambs? On Easter Sunday, I asked you to look in the mirror and find the reign of God in your own face, in your own life. The first step to being inclusive like Jesus is for each of us now to look in our hearts and be honest about which of God's lambs we have put in some other camp. A camp, we put them there because, as the old song says, we're carefully taught to hate. We're carefully taught to hate, but the gospel demands that we learn to love each other as Christ loves us. Then we pray for Jesus to unleash the power of the resurrection to transform our lives and the lives of every creature in heaven, on earth, and under the sea, and in the sea, until each one is as precious to us as they are to our Father in heaven. Then what? Then it gets back to not giving in to the forces of death, but to wage peace. Let's challenge ourselves, each one of us, to listen with respect to those who don't agree with us, to give people a great break. And even if someone is being hateful, don't return like for like. That just escalates the violence. You don't have to like someone. You don't have to agree with them to be kind to them. We must stop entertaining ourselves with gratuitous violence. And parents, too many video games deal in death. One gamer said he'd killed 150,000 people in video games by the time he was 18. 150,000. That's a lot of dead lambs, even if they're digital. What's he learning? What if you want to take some risks? Not just sit at home, but go out and take some risks. Believe it or not, as the imam said, you're taking one right now just by gathering in a place of worship. Most Christian churches in Sri Lanka are locked and empty today. But you're here. Yay, you. Our Quaker friends, if you still are thinking of things to do, our Quaker friends have workshops called bystander training, which teaches people how to intervene when someone is harassing another person in public through tactics that de-escalate the conflict nonviolently. Like Hend, they say we are to act first and save, not just react and weep. This all made me remember back in 2001 on 9/11, a half dozen of the stay-at-home moms at my church went to the closest mosque next to us in outside Columbus, Ohio, and they said, "We will go with your women as they go shopping, whether it's the grocery store, wherever it is they're going, whatever they need. We will fit our schedule to theirs." This was totally their doing. The clergy didn't come up with this. We didn't think of it at all. What did I learn from those women? Now, these are just, oh, and by the way, this stole is from that church. I thought it was appropriate for today. Not only was it made by one of the women who had that idea, but it's about feeding because it's got grapes and wheat. So. Now, these are just some ideas, what one priest could come up with in a short sermon on a Sunday. And there are undoubtedly more and better ways for us to feed sheep and take care of lambs. In the power of the resurrection, we can break our protective camps, join with millions of others, thousands upon thousands of people of every tongue and nation, to learn together to arise and wage peace.